How's it going? And welcome to episode 232 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings, and we have a great show. The season is over, but it is just beginning again. And I'm not just getting ahead of myself, Kevin, with 2026 drafts. We are going to be talking a lot about the 2025 playoff fantasy season, most notably the NFBC playoff hold'em format that we have going on that we are prepping for right now. And to help us do so, we brought on Lucas Beery, a friend of the show. And I'm saying that is like the easiest way I could possibly say this. I didn't do the tally beforehand, Lucas, and I apologize, but you and Todd are right up there with each other. Todd might have passed you in a previous episode as he was on our PitchCon show as well. But this might have brought you right back up there. Thanks for coming back on. First, Kevin, how you doing? Welcome back. How did the season end for you?
Well, it's great. It was fun. A blast. Enjoyed it. Congratulations to you and your Red Sox. I will be picking alternate favorite teams for the postseason to root for. I don't think it surprises many people. I talk pretty favorably about Seattle throughout the much of the year. And in fact, at the trade deadline said, this is the team to beat now. And I'm going to stick with that. So I'll be rooting for Seattle, but they wouldn't face the Red Sox if they keep winning till the ALCS. So yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm pumped for this postseason. And yeah, later in the show, NFBC postseason hold'em, one of my favorite contests. I love it. Been doing it for at least 6 years that I can remember. And then Lucas, one of my favorite people in this industry and our favorite guest. This is just a fantastic Monday, Adam.
We're not going to talk about him at all throughout the course of the episode, but that hat, Lucas, is on point. The Devil Rays
yes,
hat
is
spot on. So congratulations. You've already won the podcast by bringing that hat on. So well done.
Appreciate having me on. It's always fun to talk. And as far as the playoffs go, it's going to be awesome playoffs. Feel bad for the Mets fans because they had a great hitting roster, but they fell apart and in spectacular fashion, unfortunately. So, but yeah, we got a great field lined up for us.
Maybe it's hyperbole, but I feel like there's always that one team, right, that completely falls apart or completely becomes a Cinderella story. Obviously, last year was the Tigers. This year, you could say it was Cleveland to an extent, almost at the expense of the Tigers. Cincinnati fits into that bubble as well this year. So for every downfall, there's always another team that rises from the ashes and surprises everybody. So let's choose to look at the positive and congratulate Reds fans for taking the spot rather than put down Mets fans for completely falling apart. And that'll be the last I talk on that subject because I literally just did the opposite of what I'm suggesting everybody do. but let's get in. Let's kind of shut the door on the 2025 regular season before moving on to talking about the extended playoff ranks. Lucas, 2025 is over as far as regular fantasy goes. How was your season? How did you do? And I'm going to put both of you guys on the spot, and I'll give mine as well. But give me one lesson that you could take away, regardless of format, regardless of results of particular formats that you did, that you're going to hopefully learn from and then take with you into the 2026 season.
As far as the season goes, it was a pretty good season. It wasn't a great season or anything. I was able to win a few leagues, but maybe not quite as many as I had hoped, but did all right in the DCs. I got a good amount of second places, but no wins, which always leaves you a little bit hungry, but it was overall pretty decent. So yeah, it was a good year. And as far as the lesson goes, I had a tricky time figuring out what, just because everything's so fresh. But one thing that really hurt me in one of my biggest leagues, was that I had too many stashes from the get-go, and I did not intend for them to be stashes, but maybe I should have been aware of those players whenever I selected them, as I had picked Brandon Woodruff in an auction league, as well as Bubba Chandler. And just holding on to those players just killed me, because you pick those players. Chandler was a reserve round guy, but Woodruff I did pay for in the auction. So you're putting in a bench pitcher in his stead. Now you have a five-man bench, and nobody would have ever expected Chandler to have sat in Indy for so long in AAA near us, Adam. But people could have figured out that Woodruff was going to have a delayed start to the season. And even though he was good when I put him in my lineup, it was so long with a five-man bench, and I just missed out on other breakouts and other opportunities. So,
yeah, you put your handcuffs on your roster by having too many of those, for sure. It's a lesson that you hear so many people talk about, and it's an easy lesson to learn. It's a hard lesson to act on in the future. And once you're like under the gun, you're like realizing, man, you know, it didn't work out for me last year, but maybe this time. It's like the Arrested Development meme. But this, it could work for us. Solid. My lesson that I learned this year for myself is that I'm a very different fantasy player than I was just 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, even. And I very much so had a very different, personal life, lifestyle, whatever, that I could handle a very high volume of leagues, of drafts, and then being very active. And I came to the conclusion very early on in the season that, Lucas, I'm sure you can very well attest to being in GLARF with me, that I will be doing less is more mentality going into 2026. And I will be doubling down on my most important leagues. And I find a lot more, I have a lot more interest in my leagues where I know the majority of the players that I play against, and I play against them year in and year out, rather than putting my hat in the ring with a bunch of different leagues and just kind of seeing how that works out. This is both a shout out to my GLARF teammates, and to, you know, my home league, and to maybe a very small handful of other leagues that I play in, that you'll be seeing a lot more of me, because I am not going to spread myself as thin going into 2026 as I did in 2025. And it showed in my standings, because it was not a very good year overall. I won one league. It was my home league. It's the one I paid the most attention to. And that it goes to show, and it's like, all it takes is the attention to be applied to your leagues, and you can do, you know, you can jump off the ship real quick by missing two or three weeks of fab, or two or three weeks of pickups, or whatever. And then it's really hard to kind of jump back in, especially if you're in an extremely competitive league. Kevin, overall 2025, how were your standings? And then what are you hoping to take into 2026?
Yeah, my 2025 was similar to 2024 and similar to Lucas's 2025. It was okay, and some cashes, some seconds. I don't think I won a league, but it was overall okay. Mm-hmm. I did have a couple of leagues that were absolutely horrible, and I couldn't dig out of it. And I was trying. I was really trying to get in there. And could not. So it was really kind of up and down. And the thing was, Adam, I didn't really have a chance in any league down the stretch. Like, second was the best I was going to finish in any league over the past couple weeks of the season. And that was a little disheartening. I was still enjoying watching games, having a great time watching baseball. But I like it when I'm in the hunt coming down the stretch in these leagues. We all do, of course. The biggest thing I learned, I will second Lucas's point, and because and your follow up as well. Yeah, I said it last year, and then I had Brandon Woodruff on my bench in all these leagues, and it's the guys that we keep thinking, right? This is the week, and then a setback, and then this is the week, and then a setback, and I was really, I had said, I'm not putting myself in this position to start the season, right? You can end up like I would say Jordan Alvarez, like he was another player that ended up being that way. But he was healthy to start the year. So Woodruff wasn't, and I went ahead and drafted him anyway, took that discount. He's going to be so good when he's back, and he was, but it was too little too late. He was handcuffing us all season, like Lucas said. So I absolutely reiterate that. I think a big thing for me that I just realized, and probably knew it and didn't really just think about it enough, is I need to be more careful about what I'm paying attention to. Some things really don't matter that much, and I spend a lot of time on them. And I'm going to skip ahead. My example isn't going to be for 2025 regular season. It's going to be for what we're talking about later in this episode. I looked at the leaderboard from last season's NFBC postseason hold'em tournament, and stolen bases, they're worth 1 point. And there's a difference in 10 over like the top 100 finishers in the comp. 10 points in stolen bases is the difference. I don't care about stolen bases for, like, even when I do my auction calculator, if I want to see how guys perform, I'm not including stolen bases. I don't care. I think it's just, in a contest like this, it's noise, right? Because they're 1 point and everybody's going to have between 5 and 15 of them, right? And I think there's things like that throughout the season that I spend a lot of time on that don't really matter enough to be putting that much time into. Focus more on the construction with the players that are healthy and the trends of the, you know, looking ahead at the handedness and these types of things that we do spend a lot of time on. But when the rabbit holes I get sidetracked on don't matter enough to be spending that time. That's what I'm going to force myself to remember next season.
Knowing what matters obviously goes a long way in not only in your success, but in your sanity. Right. Yeah. And like not sweating the little things. And by little things, I mean the things that aren't going to actually move the needle. And so, yeah, I think that's a good call out in general, general speak as well. All right. Well, you know, there's going to be a lot of places that you can either read or you can listen to people talk about their seasons. If you're still on Twitter, even on Blue Sky, wherever you're looking at all the talking heads like you're seeing on our screen today, a lot of people will talk about how well or how bad their season was. So by all means, reach out to that. But I think it's good to just kind of like sweep it under the rug, get it out of the way, but also not forget about anything that might have happened, because it happened, right? And we're gonna move on, and you're gonna do what you need to do next year to be better. So that being said, we're not going to move on to 2026 quite yet. We are going to talk about the 2025 playoffs. And before we do that, we are going to take a quick break. All right, we're back, and on a very different recording schedule for us, Kevin, as we record this on Monday night, which is weird, but the off season makes us do weird things. So that's great. So we get to get out of our comfort zone a little bit and move along to talk about things. Again, these are one of the few type of episodes that we get to do where I can actually make us talk about baseball and not just fantasy baseball. And that's at the crux of it, at the heart of everything. We are baseball fans, and we want to watch, like you said, Kevin, you never lost your interest in watching good baseball, and watching the games and enjoying it. And that's what we're all going to do. We're going to talk about the 2025 postseason hold'em program or format on the NFBC. But in order to do that, we also have to have an idea of what we're going to be watching. And the hold'em format does not include the wild card round. And so we get to watch eight teams battle it out for 3 days all in four stadiums. It does, anybody living under a rock and doesn't realize, they don't move back and forth. All the games are played in either, in this year, it's Cleveland, Chicago, New York, or LA. Luckily for MLB, you know, three major markets for that they can really point to, and they get to play across three different time zones as well. So they get to spread out those games, make sure that nothing overlaps. You know, I'm of the opinion that it kind of stinks to see like the smallest market get the day game, all three games. So it's like, I worry about Cleveland filling that stadium all three games. I hope they do. I hope they show me up, but it's too bad that they're kind of put in that position to force their fans to, you know, skip out on work and, you know, skip school and do whatever they need to do. You know, Cleveland, maybe they should have just changed their fall break to middle of the end of September, early October instead. But we'll see how they do there. So I want to put everybody on the spot here. I want you to get your overall thoughts on each series very quickly, and then overall who's winning the series. And by the time we're done with this, it's going to segue nicely into the hold'em, because Kevin, as you'll help me explain, well, you'll explain the rules and regulations of the format. There are benefits to having players that play the entire postseason. And they continue to move on round and round. So, Lucas, we're going to start on the West Coast with LA and Cincinnati, as us being here in Indiana, Cincinnati being our closest spot. They're not playing in Cincinnati, but that's neither here nor there. Who you got? Can Cincinnati continue the magic and knock out the Dodgers, who did not get a bye in the first round?
You know, using the FanGraphs playoff odds, the Reds do have a 32% chance. So, I mean, that's, you know, one out of three. I mean, that's not nothing, but I would choose the Dodgers in this matchup. I don't think we had mentioned it yet, but if you are doing this NFBC playoff contest, you don't even need to worry about the wild card, which is kind of nice. I get that sometimes people want to make those predictions count too, but you can just sit back, relax, and enjoy these games. So that's good. Those lineups will lock on Saturday morning, though, once the division series is begin. But for me, I'm going to go with the Dodgers as far as my choice. Outside of their bullpen being a weakness, they're extremely strong everywhere. And I think they can match the Reds' frontline pitching just because their offense is so elite, and the Reds' offense is one of the worst in the league.
Mm-hmm. I won't count. I tend to agree with you. I mean, for the record, 32%, if you're batting 320, everybody's ecstatic, right? But at the same time, like, I'm not going to count out Terry Francona at any point until he proves me otherwise. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, on paper, it seems like, you know, the Dodgers should probably take this. Kevin, I'll give you the other NL series here, San Diego at the Cubs. Who do you like, and who would you be expecting to see in the first round of the hold'em availability?
Really quickly, I love that. I think it's going to be the most fun of the wild card series to watch, San Diego and the Cubs. But if Hunter Green goes out and shoves, then Cincinnati's just got to get lucky in one out of two, right? That's what I'm looking at, and that's kind of what I expect. But I don't think I expect them to get lucky those one out of two. But it's you know, we saw two of the away teams last year sweep the home team in the wild card, Detroit being one of them. That great story from 2024. So with Hunter Green going game one, that really opened my eyes when I saw that. Like, ooh, this could be really interesting, really quick. But yeah, Cubs Padres. I think this is going to be the most fun, in spite of us getting a Boston New York Yankees wild card round. Adam, we'll let you cover that one. Yeah, I think this is gonna be a lot of fun, and I tend to think the Cubs righted the ship in time, right? A team that we saw just like a well-oiled machine early in the year. It was almost a foregone conclusion they would be in the postseason. Then they started slumping there for a little bit, and it was their offense. They weren't really hitting. I think we saw them recover in time. You know, it's going to be some of the same issues that we've seen for many of these teams, right? They all have flaws, of course. It is why they slumped there for a little while. I think the biggest issue for Chicago is the bullpen, but the way Brad Keller and a couple of other guys stepped up down the stretch, not as the closer, but to get them to that ninth inning, I think is really helped them, and they've kind of recovered. And so I kind of feel like the Cubs will pull this out. I am leaning that way, partly due to the home field advantage after I just told you that two of the home teams got swept in last year's wild card. But yeah, I like the Cubs here very slightly in what I think is going to be the most entertaining series of the wild card round.
Fair. All right. Well, I'll without further ado, yeah, we'll get the elephant out of the room here with the Yankees Red Sox first round. As I told you before we started recording, I'm of the opinion I preferred the rule that Major League Baseball used to have, where divisional opponents couldn't meet until the championship round. Obviously, with the expansion and what have you, that is out the window. It's not even a possibility. Whatever, for trying to figure that out. There's enough tiebreakers to worry about than having to figure out reseeding. With that being said, three game series, like I have no problem being a homer here and thinking the Red Sox can squeak out for the same reasons that you mentioned. Hunter Green coming into LA and shoving, Crochet can do the same exact thing. Yep. And you know, the being the lone lefty that the Red Sox will probably start in that, they have to win that game. If they don't win that game, then yes, completely, you know, the Yankees could probably easily sweep the second game. Being in Yankee Stadium doesn't help, of course, but you know, Crochet being as good as he is, and then also forcing the likes of Trent Grisham and Ben Rice out of the lineup, at least to start the game, is not something I'm too upset about as a Red Sox fan. So yeah, I like I will go ahead and pick the Sox to win this. Regardless, as we'll talk about, it's a weird format because this year, just because of the way that the seedings all worked out, there will be an American League East team in the ALCS. Like, it's a guarantee, just the way that it all maps out. The other American League series, though, I'll bounce it right back to Lucas, because again, it's the other Ohio closest state to us team. Cleveland hosting the Detroit Tigers, another interdivisional matchup as well. What do you like in that series, Lucas?
So yeah, this is a Glarf type of series, since we're Adam and I are in the Great Lakes area, and we have friends that are huge Guardians fans, huge Tigers fans.
They're not that far from each other either.
Yeah.
It's gonna be. You know what? I take back a lot of what I said earlier. Because of the proximity of Detroit to Cleveland, they should have no problem selling out those day games.
Yes. And these teams are both evenly matched. As far as the talent level, I think they're both okay teams, which is good, but obviously they're not going to be world beaters or anything. But, you know, you've got Skubal going in that first game. I think that's going to be a huge advantage for the Tigers. But I mean, just based on the directions of these teams, the Tigers are just not really playing with the belief that they had in the middle of the year. Meanwhile, the Guardians are red hot. I mean, this is a team that knew that they clinched the division. They were down a few runs. They still came back and won in a quote unquote meaningless game because they have that belief inside their clubhouse. And I know that some people who are analytics focused might roll their eyes at that, but I just think based on the direction, with it being so close, I would choose the team that has kind of the better chemistry and they're rolling, and that would be Cleveland.
Yeah, that man, after Skubal, that the rest of that rotation in Detroit is what are the kids saying? Sus? Is that what the kids say nowadays? At least that's what my kid says, and it's really annoying. So, all right. Well, we got the wild card out of the way, and whether or not, you know, either one of us agrees with one of our picks, that's fine. Let's move on to the divisional round, because these are the teams that we're going to be considering as we're after putting together these. As Lucas mentioned, the wild card round doesn't matter as far as the Hold'em tournament goes. And so, Lucas, keep it rolling here. We got Toronto playing somebody, and we've got Seattle playing somebody in the American League. Kevin, I'll let you take the National League. Overall, do you like Seattle's odds of beating either Cleveland or Detroit, or do you like the field? And the same question for Toronto versus the other AL East opponents.
Yeah, so just to tackle the easier one first, I love Seattle's chances for the NFBC game and for the playoffs. I was actually surprised. I don't want to reference FanGraphs playoff odds too much because any viewer can just check that out for themselves. It's a great product. Go look at it. But to just simply win the division series, Seattle has a 65% chance, and they have a 21.1% chance of winning the World Series, which is double the next team in the American League. So that's a pretty significant advantage in my mind, playing the Central Division. So I think Seattle's set up beautifully for this. Now, as far as that battle in the American League East, you know, I like the Jays' offense, but as far as their pitching goes, I don't think it's very well suited for an October matchup, since they have a lot of good players, but they don't have that number one guy you want to take the ball like a Max Fried, who's done it before, won a World Series for Atlanta. So I'm actually going to go with New York in that series. I know it pains you. I may never come back on the podcast again, Adam, but no, I think New York, just with their frontline pitching, and they have the best WOBA in the big leagues by 7 points over the second place Dodgers with a 338 WOBA to a 331 WOBA for LA. So New York's got their elite hitting. They've got good defense now with Grisham up the middle as a good center fielder. They haven't had one in a while, and they have that frontline pitching.
Oh, sorry. You seem to be cut off, Lucas. Okay, we'll see you later. Maybe we'll see you in the future. Oh no, all right, good. Oh, no, you're fine. All right, that's fine. All right. Well, Kevin, then moving on then to the National League, we've got, you know, the winner of the, whether, you know, you took the Cubs San Diego series. We've got the LA Cincinnati. They go off and face, respectfully, of course, Milwaukee and or Philadelphia. Lucas was asking you earlier about, you know, I'm sure it'll come up a little bit later, but your success a couple of years ago in the Hold'em, you know, had quite a few Phillies on your roster that you were able to be successful with, while a majority of the other teams in the hunt had a lot of Houston players as well. So with that being said, I'm only mentioning this because the Phillies obviously are another option here. Do you like Phillies odds as in the same way? And how about on the other side of the coin with Milwaukee?
Yeah, I do like the Phillies. In fact, I hope I'm wrong about Cincinnati. Only having to win one out of two. Hunter Green going out and get him to that first win, because if Cincinnati does advance, everybody in the contest, other than Reds fans for the most part, is going to have extra Phillies and less Cincinnati Reds than they would have Los Angeles Dodgers. And I will pick the Phillies in that division round over either Cincinnati or the Dodgers. So I'm hoping it's the Dodgers for my benefit, if that makes sense. And then
makes perfect sense.
You know, with the Cubs and Brewers, then I like the Brewers for the same reason I like the Cubs in the previous series. Yeah, the Brewers, they kind of backed off a little bit. The hottest team in baseball there, you know, most of August, and just kind of pulled away in the NL Central, kind of slacked off a little bit. But with Freddie Peralta at the top of that staff, and, you know, some of the guys that did start out slow earlier in the year, we would talk, Adam, like the Brewers are great and their best couple of players aren't hitting, and it was William Contreras and I don't remember who the other one was, but they've come around. They're a complete team. I think the Brewers are going to be really tough to beat. The problem for me will be choosing between Phillies and Brewers to advance to the World Series. But yeah, I do think both teams that have the first round bye in the National League will move along here, even if it is the Dodgers that the Phillies face.
Yeah, fair enough.
Kevin, I'm curious, with no Brandon Woodruff for the Brewers, how much different does that make everything look for that team?
It is. It is a difference. I would love to see Woodruff there, but I just feel like the Brewers as you brought it up earlier, Lucas, like the whole vibe of a team, right? Yeah. When you were talking Cleveland, right? There's not a lot of analytics about it, but I remember 10 years ago now when my Royals made their World Series run, I'll never forget Craig Mish. That spring training, the best vibe in any clubhouse he visited that spring training was the Kansas City Royals. And that's why he chose them to go to the World Series again, back to back, and go back to the World Series. Best vibe. The Brewers have had that all season. So that is playing a part as well for me.
And sorry, Adam, I just wanted to ask, you have another question. As far as that American League, since this, I think, is going to be obviously crucial for, figuring out that potentially Dodgers-Philly series, I think it's going to be huge for this contest. And then, yep. Kevin, I'm curious what your thoughts were on the American League side. I know I kind of went with the Yankees, but it's so close. I don't really feel super confident about that.
Well, fortunately, the wild card round, we don't have to worry True. About for the contest. So we'll know who it is. I tend to agree with you. I give a slight edge to the Yankees. Won't surprise me one bit if it's Boston, especially with, like Adam said, with Crochet going in game one. But I think I take either one over Toronto. Same reasons that you had. I agree there. And yeah, Seattle, I've loved since the trade deadline. And I think... probably at this point, I'm picking Seattle to go to the World Series, but depending on who they face in the ALCS, I might revisit that, a week and a half, 2 weeks from now. But I think that's where I'm leaning. I do think Seattle cruises through the division round versus either Cleveland or Detroit. Like you said, get the easy one out of the way.
I mean, it is important to, again, feel as though you feel confident about the teams that are going to make it from round to round, especially all the way to the World Series, and putting all of your eggs into those respective baskets early. Kevin, when you get into it, you'll remind everybody with the rules of roster construction. But there is a way to maximize those extra points, those multipliers, from the first round on, as well. So, with that leading us to the actual World Series here, Lucas, start us off here. What's your final World Series, matchup? And not that it applies to this contest, but who's winning the whole thing?
Yeah. So as far as my World Series, I did make this prediction in the summer and I'm going to stick with it. I'm not going to edit it, not going to update it. I had the Seattle Mariners, like Kevin said, against San Diego Padres. Ooh. And I think both of those teams have all the recipe to win. Both of those teams have premier bullpens. Good hitting lineups, and they'll need some luck too, because some of the big dogs like the Phillies and the Dodgers would have to go down. The Yankees would have to go down. But I mean, we saw a World Series a few years ago with the Diamondbacks and the Rangers, and crazy things can happen. And I think to be successful in this contest, you got to go against the grain a little bit. Although we're coming off one of the chalkiest World Series I can remember with the Yankees and Dodgers. So, right. What do I know?
All right. Well, Kevin, you're straying away from that. I mean, you guys seem to be in pretty strong agreement with Seattle. What about the National League side?
I'm going to stick with my Phillies, and this is in spite of pitching injuries. You know, it when and well, we're going to talk more about this here in just a little bit. Any type of format that's a little different than what they're used to, I always advocate for running that scoring system through an auction calculator. And Christopher Sanchez, is, after Garrett Crochet and Tarik Skubal, the highest ranking pitcher in this scoring format for the 2025 season. So he is the best pitcher that we know we'll have available for us in the first round of the contest, with Skubal and Crochet having to win wild card rounds first. So, yeah, Zach Wheeler, yep, his injuries, Aaron Nola's not the pitcher he once was, but it was Christopher Sanchez, Jesus Luzardo, and it's just outside the top 10 in scoring when you put it through an auction calculator. So I'm going to, and we know the lineup is there, the offense. So in spite of some pitching injuries, I think the Phillies have the pitching to get it done.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting now with the expanded playoff that we've seen over the last couple of years, in the fact that you always hear the adage, this team was built for the playoffs, not the regular season, or vice versa. Like, there's teams that are built for the regular season, but they're not quite built for the playoffs. And that usually means in a short series, right? In a, you know, I just need three guys to start and we'll rotate that through. There's an off day and all that. But there's a difference between a short series and an actual series. In these playoffs, these wild card round, three games, no off days. You're just bam, bam, bam. You don't even travel, right? You stay in one spot. And so I do think we can see some surprises, to Kevin, your original point with, you know, Hunter Green. Obviously, I'm leaning on Garrett Crochet. Mm-hmm. And the Red Sox one, it's like you can find a way to squeak by a three-game series. Like, this happens throughout the season all the time. Like, random teams win series, and we just, you know, call it the series at that time. They don't have to be sweeps. You know, you just have to win two.
We had Rockies win streaks this year. We had periods where the White Sox were sweeping series. Exactly.
And, you know, a lot of the teams knew what was happening. This is one of the year there weren't a lot of surprise at the end. The last 2 days of the season, yes, Lucas, as you mentioned, like, Cleveland was still playing it out, just, you know, just because that's who they are. That's their makeup. But, like, Cincinnati was the only one that was in question. And even then, I had to do was worry about the Mets losing. They were in line with their own, like, they were in control of their own destiny. And, you know, even though they lost, you know, luckily for them, the other team lost as well. So they could still find a way to line themselves up in the most positive way. They didn't have to worry about throwing their ace on a game that mattered. They didn't have to worry about utilizing their bullpen as much as they could have. Nobody had to do that. So everybody's kind of lined up the way that's going to optimize for their roster. And so, you know, it'll be fun to watch, and kind of see who surprises and who disappoints, because that literally happens every year. It's by design. It would, it seems like. All right. Well, with all those things in mind, we're going to move into talking a little bit more about actual fantasy baseball, and as we focus on the NFBC playoff hold'em format. Now, there's a lot of other formats out there that do similar things, and so a lot of them, there's going to be a lot of overlap as far as, like, general strategy, but we are going to focus our attention on the specific rules and regulations of this format. But I think a lot of what we talk about will be able to be overlapped and utilized in other playoff. And then I played in other playoff formats that have had similar multiplier rules and regulations as well. So I think a lot of it's going to overlap, but we're first going to take another quick break. All right, guys, we're back. We're still listening to On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. We will be, yeah, the season's over, but we will be recording all off season long as we look at various different topics. Kevin, as we always talk about, it's fun for us, because we don't pigeonhole ourselves, but we put ourselves in a very strict format throughout the season for consistency's sake. And, you know, it just makes sense for what we talk about. this is a fun time for us to kind of like pick and choose what we want to talk about. And today we are talking about postseason playoff or postseason fantasy baseball. Not a draft, more of a pick 'em style format. Kevin, why don't, and I'll let Lucas join in as well, because Lucas did a great job of outlining this particular format on FTN last year, writing up a little synopsis article about what goes into this and how, you know, the strategy that you were going to go into the 2024 playoff series as well. But Kevin, give us a rundown on the general roster format, the rules, regulations, everything that we need to know going into as we consider how many, you know, how many times we're going to enter into this contest.
Yeah, it's really simple. We can cover all of the rules pretty quickly. Our rosters, a catcher, first baseman, second baseman, shortstop, third baseman. There is not a corner or middle infielder, only four outfielders and a utility player. Okay. So there's your hitters, and then six pitchers. They can be starters, relievers, any mix, does not matter. So 16 players for the opening round division series. That's an average of two players per team. You have to have at least one player from each team and no more than three in that divisional round. In the championship series, the players that you did have in the first round that advance, if you choose to use them again, and unless there's an injury, I've tried to come up with reasons not to use a player that advanced in the past. And Adam, you and I talked about this a little off air before recording. The only way I can fathom doing that when there's not an injury is if I think the playing time's going away for a different reason, because just the multiplier is so valuable. In the second round, which is the championship series for this contest, minimum of two players from each team and maximum of six players from each team. And for any player that you had in the previous round, you get double the points that they score in the championship series round. When you get to the World Series, we're getting all 16 of our players from two teams, minimum of six, maximum of 10 from either team. And any player that you had in since the division series, now in this round, you're getting three times. If you had added them in the championship series, you're getting two times. The players you're adding just for the World Series, for players you lost in the championship series, just that one time of what they score in the World Series. That's pretty much it. That's all of the rules that we have. You know, the scoring, really quick, point basis pitching is very simple. A point for an inning pitched, a point for a strikeout, negative a point for an earned run, and 4 points for either a win or a save. That's it. Pitching's that simple. Hitting, a little more involved, but it's the 1, 2, 3, and 4 for a single, double, triple home run, one for a run, one for an RBI. So a solo home run is worth 6 points when you figure those in, like a lot of scoring formats. Stolen base is 1 point. A walk or a hit by pitch is 1 point. And then an out is negative 0.25. So batting average does make its way in that way. Actually, more along the lines of OBP, because if you get a walk, you're actually getting a point, and it's at bats that we're getting the negative for, not plate appearances. So
yeah, so that's interesting.
Gearing more towards OBP than batting average, right?
How do they score sac fly then?
Sac fly is not an at bat,
right? But
so
now
you're actually getting that quarter of a point, kind of, because it's not negative.
Right, you're not getting it taken away. It's just, yeah,
right.
Maybe this is the UI UX guy in me. It's like maybe they rename that from outs to, you know, just say at bats minus hits. Yeah, because that's confusing. But regardless, yeah, like you said, I mean, for those keeping track at home, you know, it's points based, so it's closer to your best ball. It's closer to your point based system. It's not head to head. It's not roto based. And I think the thing that, you know, threw me off at first when I was really when I was first looking at this, it's not a draft. There's no draft. You're just picking right. your players. And
there will be a lot of duplicates.
And that goes a lot of that goes into the strategy that you choose who what players you want to pick and what players, you know, are is it worth the gamble on picking up players that you think are going to go less picked in the first round, and then hopefully you get those multipliers later on. That being said, Lucas, anything else that you kind of like as you were writing your intro article last year into this space? That really stood out to you as far as like making the adjustments from full season in the strategy that goes into that into kind of changing your mindset into this kind of a format?
Yeah, as far as some of the changes or differences, I think going in with a DFS mindset of where can I choose to be different from the other guys in this contest and gals in this contest? Kevin can attest to this because he's played it a lot more than me. I only played one season. I did re-up, so I'm going to replay again this year. But if you have a game one starter, like last year, I believe that Dylan Cease was the game one starter. His ownership was so much higher than the game two starter, which was Michael King, even though theoretically they could score a similar amount of points. I get that. Whenever you have, you know, your game one starter going, he can accrue more starts as the October season rolls on. But what are the odds that King could have put up a lot more points and would have been a lot less owned? So I think looking at that kind of thing is an interesting way to look at things. What are your thoughts on that, Kevin?
Yeah, absolutely. I never went through it to look officially. But the year I did well and finished somewhere in the middle of the top 10, I do believe if I'd had Zach Wheeler in the opening round rather than Aaron Nola, and so that I was getting three times for him rather than two times, I had him flip-flopped, I think I'd have won the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
So, because yeah, I took Nola because he pitched game one, right? So what your point exactly, if I'd have made that one minor move, I think was the difference between winning it. So that is an excellent point.
And that's one of those things where can you predict which guy's going to do better? No, but I want to be on the side where less people have.
And
this
then
option.
If they both do great in the World Series, yeah. though, but you're getting triple for one and only double for the other, can make a big difference. Yep. So Nola wasn't as good in the World Series.
It's so difficult unless you're like, I think Lucas, your point of like calling out having a DFS mindset goes a long way mm-hmm. here because, you know, that's how you win an overall contest, right? Especially in that kind of a format is you have to be just different enough than your competitors, right? Otherwise you're just doubling up. Everybody's just getting the same points, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody's just, you know, having the same party. But you want to have your own party. The other thing that I think that in Kevin, tell me if I'm crazy here. Like, is it worth trying to predict volume in the way where if you think a seven game series is going to get swept versus going all the way to seven games, is it worth kind of doubling down on those players, especially on the hitting side? Actually, no, I'll say especially on the pitching side, because maybe that game one starter now becomes a little bit more valuable because you could see three games out of that starter.
The hardest part of this contest for me, Adam, and it plays right into this, is what players do I want from the teams I expect to lose?
Right, and that plays right into this.
Yeah. So, because number one, I want the one whose series is going to the longest. That's the number one.
Sure.
If I can figure that out.
Yeah.
Right. So that does play into it 100%.
So that mean Lucas, like what series would you be focusing on, or at least what teams would you be focusing on as far as like maximizing that rally? We just went through a whole section of the podcast kind of predicting who's going to win, but we didn't necessarily talk about who's going to make it seven, like who's going to make it the full 9 yards. Is there any particular team that you would expect to put up a fight the entire way?
Yeah, I think that's to Toronto and whoever wins out of the Yankees, and mm-hmm. Boston has a good chance to be a five gamer. I think that the Brewers are going to have a long battle, whether they win or lose. I think that you know, they have a bunch of okay pitchers behind Freddy Peralta, but they don't have any guys that are going to be stoppers per se. So that could be a long series there too. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that series alone, the Milwaukee series, no matter who they face, they kind of face similar opponents in that manner as well. You know, San Diego's rotation is beat up quite a bit as well. The Cubs rotation is, you know, not, you know, ace material across the board either. So they each have their stars that are kind of there for game one, game two, but, you know, moving on through three through seven in that, you know, in a certain situation, that's going to be something that could very well just kind of tit for tat every single game go back and forth. So yeah, I expect that series to go the length of the entire series as well.
You're building on that, Adam. I was having a conversation about this earlier today, right? So a team that Lucas and I both said Seattle comfortably wins their division round game. So it's highly unlikely Tarik Skubal pitches a second time. It is the move to take a Detroit hitter that you know is getting at least two games. If he pops one home run, he's probably outscoring Skubal, unless, right? Now, if Detroit advances, you're going to wish you had Skubal and the multiplier, yep. Right? But I think, and then the same thing goes, because we're not seeing these guys a second time. If the series is quick, right? And they can't pitch game one. They're not pitching game one in the division round. Skubal's not, right? If he pitches on Tuesday, he's not pitching on Saturday. Same with Garrett Crochet. Now, I think we expect that the AL East side of the bracket, that series will go long enough that, sure, we would have a chance to see Crochet a second time. Obviously, he would be the game one starter if we don't see him and they advance to the championship series. But it makes it tough when you're these teams that you aren't so sure is going to advance and they have a stud ace going in the wild card round. But it is, if we're correct about who's going to win these series, we're probably getting one appearance out of them. And I think I'm leaning that way. It's not what I've done in the past, but I think I'm going to steer away from a guy like Tarik Skubal in this contest this time.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, especially, you know, we talk about, you know, the wild card is only three games. Division round is only five games. It's like you don't get to seven until you get to the championship round. So as your point stands, Skubal, you know, strong possibility he only pitches one time in that divisional round. Lucas, we talk about it a lot. Kevin brings it up a lot during the season when we're trying to figure out our lineups, especially in the NFBC, where you can only set your hitting lineups once in the middle of the week. So really focusing on platoons and different teams that are, you know, a little bit heavier on the platoon, leaning on that strategy than others, San Francisco, Tampa Bay, you know, there's a handful of other ones, Minnesota. How much is that going to play into your hitter selection when it comes down to it? It's like I said, this is points based, it's volume based, especially on the hitter side. If you think a guy is going to miss just one game, especially in that first round, is, you know, that enough to kind of sway away, even though you might get the multiplier in the second or third round?
For me in the first round, yeah, it's too much risk for me to take on a platoon batter. The only time I think in this contest I would be willing to do that is if my team was down and I needed a miracle. And these other guys aren't putting in Willie or Abreu, but I'll put him in because he's going to be low owned and I need a miracle. Mm-hmm. So it's a Hail Mary opportunity, kind of like you see in football DFS where, you know, they have the common setup and then at the 4 o'clock games, they notice that they're screwed. So then they put in these random bums and hope that they go off and do well that are going to be low owned.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's more of a round two or even round three play rather than a round one play. Kevin, how much attention are you paying to those matchups? Because also to your point, like Scooble is not going to pitch multiple times in the first round. Maybe that platoon disadvantage for his opponent, for, you know, Seattle, in that case would be Seattle, is less of a concern. How much are you paying attention to that?
Definitely paying attention. And I almost look at it the other way, right? We talked all season about the Cubs lineups the same every day, regardless of handedness. So that gives me a little comfort, right? I'm looking at those guys. I haven't went through and actually picked a team yet with who I think will be in the division round, but I have an inclination, you know, the top shortstops in baseball aren't in the postseason. A guy like Dansby Swanson makes a lot of sense in this contest for me. And I don't think he'll be highly rostered. People are going to go with Trey Turner and a couple other guys. And I think, but Dansby Swanson, we know he's going to be in that lineup every day for the Cubs. So I think that kind of turning it the other way, the teams that I know that there are guys that are going to play every day, regardless, I'm going to gravitate towards, because you have to set your lineup for the entire round of the postseason.
And that leads me to a great follow-up question, and I'll just bounce it right back to Lucas on this one as far as roster construction goes. And we talked a lot about so far, like what teams, what players and what teams you're kind of focusing on to move on. But what it really comes down to is you have to field a full roster, and you have some limitations on how many players from each team you have to have, never mind at maximum that you can have. When you are kind of building that roster, how much attention are you paying to, like Kevin kind of alluded to, there's only so many shortstops going to be available. Yes, there's a shortstop on every team. I get that. But there's only going to be so many shortstops you actually care about or actually want a roster. So when you identify the position that is more limited, how often is that going to kind of be the wild card decision maker when it comes to, you know, I don't really want that many Cubs, but this is a position that I really need to fill. I guess I'm just going to have to fill it with my shortstop if I want Dansby Swanson or something like that.
No, I think that's a perfect question. And I was going to mention that with Kevin, like, and I think the shortstop example is a fair point, but I think one that really illustrates how weak this position is the second base position. I have it pulled up here. You have Jazz Chisholm. People are going to put that in their lineup and think, man, I have the best second baseman. But who's to say that Jorge Polanco couldn't outscore him? I mean, he's not as good as him, but it's a short sample size and it's an ownership game. There's other players further down the list, such as Jake Cronenworth or even Xander Bogaerts, if you wanted to go that route, because this game does have nice multi-eligibility. Even like Bryson Stott has a shortstop, even though he didn't get 20 games there for next year. So I think the comfortable, quote-unquote, high-floor, easy route is going to be in, you know, your Trey Turners, your Jazz Chisholms. And if you're willing to go a little bit against the grain and utilize a Polanco, who's an everyday batter for Seattle in the heart of their lineup, or Bryson Stott, even better as far as sometimes picking a lower of the lineup guy, is going to give you even a less owned player that's going to be more overlooked. So I think having some chalk in your lineup is absolutely okay. But in my mind, and Kevin, I'm curious what you think. I think it should be limited a decent amount.
Yeah, I agree. And another point similar that I brought up with Adam pre-show is some of the absolute superstars. Like in the past, I've thought about trying to beat them, right? Like I've come to the conclusion you have to be very confident, or at least confident enough that this is your team for the postseason to think you have to have a reason that you think they may not perform well in the series is what I'm getting at.
That's true.
Otherwise, just Aaron Judge, right? Cal Raleigh, these guys. Cal Raleigh, yeah, William Contreras is in here. William Contreras didn't have quite the power this year, but had another great year. He, in this scoring format, scored over 200 points less than Cal Raleigh this season. it's like a free square on a bingo card is the way I look at it, because I don't think enough people are not going to have Aaron Judge that if you do have him and he doesn't perform, it's going to hurt you. But if he does what we know Aaron Judge can do and many people would expect him to do, and you don't have him, you're done. You're done immediately, right? So I think some of these guys that are very elite and we think it's pretty likely they're at least going to do close to what we expect, just treat it like a free space on a bingo card and use them. Don't try to get too cute. And if you do, it's one or two guys. You're not going to beat all of them, right? They're not all going to be horrible. So don't think you're giving up this great contrarian team, because what's a little different from DFS is it isn't just one day. This is a month long, right? Or 3 weeks once the wild card's over. Several games, three rounds of games. So we do get somewhat of a sample size going, much more than one day like we get in DFS.
Kevin, how do you look at your lineup and think to yourself, wow, I have way too much chalk, or I have too many of the popular quote-unquote studs? I get that this is a feel-based game since there's not ownership projections like there are over at Roto Grinders or wherever, but like, how do you look at that lineup and you think, uh-oh, I have too many of the popular picks?
The teams, right? Yankees, Dodgers, Red Sox, they're going to have more ownership even if they're going to be more highly rostered, even if maybe they shouldn't be.
Yep.
So that's one thing, is try to get away from those teams if I can. And then I feel like I call it my I refer to it as my Mark Lemke, right? I try to find one player on a team I think is going to do well and use them in the first round that maybe not everybody is going to pick. So it's not from a team necessarily that I don't think is going to advance, but take the Phillies, for example. If you think the Phillies are going to advance, who are you going to roster? I think most people would say right away they're going to have Kyle Schwarber, they're going to have Bryce Harper, they're going to have probably Christopher Sanchez. He's pitching game one, right? Maybe a little variance, but you know, you mentioned Bryson Stott, right? Let me look real quick. You know, the Phillies have a great lineup. You could go Lizardo. Don't go the pitcher that's going to go game one, right? You throw another one I thought of today. Like, just because I don't think Seattle, right? I think everybody, everybody's going to have Cal Raleigh. Yep. A lot of people have Julio. There'll be some Josh Naylor. I think there will be some Polanco out there. Multi-positional eligible, so people will use him in a spot.
That's a good point. That actually, he only has second. I just checked it.
Oh, okay. And then but a player that when I looked at the auction calculator with this scoring format that shocked me as high as he was, and a lot of people do this that do this contest and will know this, but in this scoring format, right, Aaron Judge, Kyle Schwarber, I'm talking outfielders. There's no Juan Soto. There's no Corbin Carroll. George Springer, third highest. And that's well over 100 less plate appearances than most players on this list. Julio, Tatis, right? We would expect. And then no James Wood, no Brent Rooker. So the sixth best outfielder in this scoring system for the entire season, Randy Arozarena. And sure, I don't think he's going to be like nearly a zero roster player, but he's going to get overlooked because there's so many players from Seattle to choose from. I think Randy Arozarena as the sixth highest scoring outfielder in baseball that qualifies for this contest probably isn't going to be on a lot of teams.
And for a player that's leading off on one of the best teams that we think is going to move on. Now the concern that kind of, maybe that makes
question
up for the
question is
fact,
who do you kick out from Seattle? Right?
Not only who you kick out, but like we talked about earlier, like, hey, how, like, if we think a team is going to go the full five or seven games in their series, maybe the fact that he leads off kind of balances that out. If that series only goes three, if they sweep, or if they only go four instead of five in that first round, the fact that he's leading off and getting the extra at-bats, and hopefully not getting any of the outs to bring that down, maybe that makes up for it as well. Lucas,
this is why I love this contest so much, because there's so many different little angles like this we could talk about and spend several minutes on each one.
What is it, Kevin? It's a max in the first round. It's a maximum of three and a minimum of one from all teams in the round, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's like figuring out how many of those teams you only want one. Well, if you do the math, you'll have to, if you did only max and mins, and how many,
it's everyone.
Yeah.
It's every series. You can. And I think most people try to nail that first round. They try to go 3-1. I have seen teams that have done very well and maybe even won it. I don't remember paying that close attention, that will have in this opening round two from each team, right? Like the winner of Boston, New York versus Toronto, I would guess we'll see some 2-2s in that series. The winner of San Diego and Chicago versus Milwaukee, I think we'll see 2-2s. If the Dodgers advance, Philadelphia and LA, I think we'll see some 2-2. But for the most part, people try to nail it 3-1 so that in that second round, if you can have 12 players, you're getting double points from because you nailed all four series. You're looking really good. You're off and running. Yeah. You're watching the leaderboard, put it that way.
Sure. And then you're doubling down and throwing, you know, $5 or $10 on each series with your bookie. Lucas, Kevin gave like a sleeper. I don't know. Sleeper is not even the right word here, but like, is there a player you kind of have had your eye on or have your eye on that you're like, hey, this is the guy that's going to get you? You mentioned Bryson Stott earlier. I'm going to put you on the spot and give me another one that you think is, you know, going to be either under rostered that you're like, hey, this is an opportunity to kind of take advantage of not only maybe their position scarcity, but also kind of put you over the edge, even if it's on a team that you don't think is going to advance the next round.
Yeah, I got one. I think Jackson Merrill is a great choice simply because there's players in that roster that are going to be easier click, so to speak, such as Tatis. Mm-hmm. They're a low
pitcher or two. Yeah.
Or some of the pitchers, and they're a 5.6% chance to win it all. So maybe somebody doesn't want to waste, quote unquote, waste their selection on Merrill. And he has not had as good of a season as anticipated, but he's been warming up a lot lately. And I think if you wanted to get a low ownership guy who could absolutely pop, I think Merrill's a good name.
All right. I think that's a great name. And you stuck in the outfield, the same kind of reasoning that Kevin gave for Rosarena. And we got to remember the roster. It's only, like you said, Kevin, is only four outfielders that you have to fill as opposed to your standard NFBC roster. He's got the five as well. So I'm going to kick you guys out of the outfield and make you pick a catcher that is not named Cal Raleigh. If you really want, like you both have already admitted, like everybody's going to have Cal Raleigh. but if you really want to roll the dice and you get to fill that catcher spot with anybody else, what would be your go-to at least in the first round? Kevin, it's your show. I'm going to make you go first, and I'll let Lucas stew on that a little bit.
I was actually looking at this earlier, and it's when I decided I can't do it, and I probably will have Cal Raleigh, even if I do multiple entries. I don't always do multiple entries, but I have in the past. But William Contreras, I think, is the obvious second choice, especially we know he will be available in that round. On scoring on the season, Ben Rice would be next, but I go all the way down. He was 12th on the season. About half these guys aren't in the postseason, and only Cal Raleigh and William Contreras, I believe, are guaranteed to be available as because they have buys. But I'm going down to the Knicks guy that has a buy, and it's Alejandro Kirk. If I were to do this, I think that might be where I'd end up, because just the consistency, the way it's scored, I don't think he's going to, you know, hit three home runs in a series with a ton of RBIs, but goes out there, gets on base, drives in a couple, scores a couple. I think he's going to get me some points if I'm going to give up that spot, because I'd rather have different Seattle Mariners on my roster.
All right. I'm not trying to get galaxy brain on here, but let me ask you a question, Kevin. Can you move a guy from a position to another position? If you pick somebody with multi-position eligibility, and let's just say you pick Cal Raleigh and you throw him in the first round, you throw him in your UT spot instead, and then you have Contreras or somebody else in your catcher spot. In the second round, can you move Cal Raleigh into your catcher spot?
I was looking at that earlier today. I don't see it in the rules, but I'm almost positive I've done that.
Okay.
So like Mookie Betts, right?
Yes, Betts.
Second short outfield. If you have the ability to move him around, that is a huge advantage when you're picking your players for guys that got eliminated the previous round. Yes.
That being said, it made his ownership so high because you could fit him into so many places versus shortstop. Like you said, it's weak, but it wasn't as weak as I thought, because you have Ellie De La Cruz and you've got Trey Turner, you know, Betts, if you expect him to have a long October, I mean, versus, you know, second base is so weak with Jazz Chisholm. He's got three positions, so he could also be selected for third or outfield. You probably wouldn't pick him for outfield, but like those guys with the multiple positions, I do think they're going to get a big ownership boost.
Yeah, so I think especially in that first round, it's just an interesting way of kind of figuring it out. Kevin, to your point, like, yeah, shortstop, you're going to have less of, and as we just kind of mentioned, you are at least know you're getting one of Mookie Betts or Ellie De La Cruz in that first round as they're playing each other. So something to keep in mind, like you don't know exactly who it's going to be, but you do know the double of the mix of players that are going to be available for the next round. Lucas, you're not off the hook though. I need your catcher sleeper. Kevin, I like Kevin, the way that Kevin outlined it. He was very honest. He's like, I don't think there's going to be a place where I don't have Cal Raleigh.
Yeah.
Like, if I don't draw the chalk, do you see yourself, is this an area that you would kind of stray away from, or is this chalk that you're willing to draw?
So going along with Kevin's point, and he did it well where, you know, he gave you a straight, perfect answer where it was easy to understand. I'm picking Seattle to go really far, so I'm happy to have this chalk. I had Los Angeles Dodgers losing early last year, and I had a lot of Padres last year. Of course, they were one game away from being eliminated, and I faded as much of the Dodgers as I could, and I went heavy on the Padres. So it was close, but it didn't quite work out. So for the Cal Raleigh, I'm happy to eat that chalk. I think he's going to be 75-80% owned, if not higher, Kevin. But I think Ben Rice is another great option if you wanted that guy who can hit 2-3 home runs in a series, and he'll probably be second or third highest owned catcher, but it's a home run game just based on the scoring setup. So I think Ben Rice is a good call too.
All right. Well, I'm going to put you guys both on the spot for one last one before I let you guys go. We need to talk pitching, because we haven't really talked pitching. You kind of threw out some names throughout the time. But I want you guys to tell me a pitcher that you'll pick on a team that you expect to lose. Whether it's first round or second round, not make the World Series. We'll just say, put it that way. So you guys both kind of had, you know, I think you both had Toronto. No matter who they face, more than likely Toronto loses that first round. You both have Seattle winning their round. So whoever comes out of that Cleveland-Detroit series, a player that you're going to focus on, a pitcher you're going to focus on that you expect to lose to try to get as much value out of that position as possible. Again, Kevin, I'm going to put you on the spot first. It's your show. I'll let Lucas think about that a little bit longer. Is there a name out there that you've already kind of had your eye on as far on the pitching side?
Not that I already had my eye on. I do think that I think a lot of people will roster Christopher Sanchez, but it'll be lower than it would be if his name was Wheeler, right? And but according to how this is scored, he has been what we would expect Wheeler to be. He's the third best pitcher in the postseason in this scoring format. And the only one that has a bye and will know that for sure we can use it in the next round. I think his rostership will actually be lower than it should be just because he's not Drew Wheeler or Zach Wheeler, excuse me. But on a team I think that will lose, gosh, I wish I would have picked Cleveland to beat Detroit, but I didn't. Because then I would say, I would go the opposite. I would take the guy against Scooble. I would take...
I got one I can go while Kevin thinks.
Yeah.
So this is the best part. We have a lot of different opinions and, you know, it's going to be so unpredictable. It's hard to say, but I don't have a good feeling about Milwaukee. That being said, I have a great feeling about Freddie Peralta. So he'd be an easy choice. You kind of hope that the offense stays cooled down. He gives you all the points that he needs to give you. And then he's eliminated and you didn't have Churio or Yelich or any of their batters. Of course, they could have a big run. They've had the best record in the major leagues. But for me, I think Freddie Peralta is a good call just because you know he's that top tier ace. And for me, just the way that I'm going to lay out the schedule, I'm picking San Diego over them. So it'll be easy for me to make him my only Brewer. And if they go down, then that goes to plan, so to speak.
I love that you picked I had my eye on Milwaukee as well for this exercise. But I'm wondering your guys' take on Jacob Mizorowski. And just being, because like you said, I think Freddie Peralta is still going to be readily rostered as well. And with Mizorowski's role uncertain, I guess is a fine word to use. It's like, how will Milwaukee not only plan to use him, but be forced to use him, whether it is on back-to-back days, out of the bullpen, in multiple innings situations. You know that if he is playing out of the bullpen and he's forced to come in and like keep things close for two or three innings for two or three games, you know, the kind of volume and kind of points that he can put up in those short stints can be better than Peralta in one game. And this is a 5-game series. So there's a possibility that Mizorowski, you know, ends up being better than that. And if they don't make it, it doesn't really matter. You're not going to get the multipliers anyway. But I guess the overall thoughts from you guys before we get back to Kevin's pick here on being like doing something a little bit outside the box and rolling the dice. We talk about like hitters that are lower in the lineup and then maybe they're under rostered because of that. But if a bullpen arm, especially one like Mizorowski, who's already kind of shown us what he can do, can actually be more valuable than a game one or game two starter in a short series. Overall thoughts on that kind of strategy from either one of you guys?
The past couple of the seasons, Adam, the way bullpens are used in the postseason now, remember it's all about volume, innings, and strikeouts. And then yes, you do get points for wins and saves. But when it gets to the postseason, you know, very few teams, especially once it's the postseason, even if they do have an established closer, use them every game. So I don't ever count on getting any points in saves from anybody. If I'm choosing a reliever, it's typically just because I don't like any of the starters that are left and I have to pick six pitchers. Sure. So by the time we get to the World Series, you probably have a reliever or two, but at least the past couple of seasons, what we've seen with bullpens and how they're just throwing everybody and we'll see a closer in the fifth. We'll see a starter in the eighth, another starter in the ninth. It's just so hard to predict the usage, even more so than it is in the regular season. So I haven't seen a big time scoring in this format from a reliever.
Fair. I hold on to my history, my memories of Derek Lowe getting, you know, a win and a save in throughout the course of the playoffs and like in every single series. And I know that doesn't happen. That your point is valid in the fact that wins are worth four, saves are worth four.
Use someone like that, and just hasn't worked out. Yeah.
Saves, it sounds like basically saves in this format are equal to stolen bases in your mind. It's like not something that you can even think about, you know, putting up, chalking up as guaranteed points.
Almost everybody at the top of the leaderboard from last year had two saves, and I'm guessing they were the same guy.
Right.
and they didn't have him until the World Series, right? It's when they finally added a closer.
Or what about your pitcher, your quote-unquote sleeper pitcher on a bad team?
Well, the guys I really like, the way you framed it, I picked to lose in the wild card round. So they don't fit. They won't be available for me. Or I did pick their team to win. But in spite, I said it was close, that I thought the Yankees would barely beat the Red Sox, and then I picked them to barely beat Toronto, I think, or did I have Toronto? I think it's close enough that Carlos Rodon, I think everybody knows he had a great year. Everybody knows, but it might surprise people in this scoring format, right, how good he was. And of this type of the players in the postseason, I mentioned Christopher Sanchez is number three. Carlos Rodon is number four in the scoring format for the entire season, with less innings than almost everybody around him. He had 195 versus the 205 for Crochet and 202 for Sanchez. I mean, he's close, but he's less innings, and he's right there with them in this scoring format, going deep into games, getting the strikeouts, and then we'll take the wins when we can get them. But somebody like Carlos Rodon, I think, scores much better in this format than people may realize.
I do wonder what the rostership is going to be on the likes of like Shane Bieber or any pitcher that it just came back, right? And you don't have the stats to kind of show what he would have done in an auction calculator per se based on this scoring format, because it's like you can't really extrapolate what two or three starts over the course of the last month that he came back with. You know, overall, is that a player like this is, if I'm not picking Toronto to win that first round, is that the kind of risk reward pitcher that you might be considering in this scenario as well? Lucas, thoughts on Shane Bieber or the like?
You know, I was thinking through the Toronto pitchers, and I do, you know, it's tough because Kevin Gausman had an excellent season this year, but I think for me, Bieber, I do have a little bit more trust at the moment, although it's close. I think in that series, outside of maybe a Max Fried, and Kevin brought up a good point with Rodon's ability to just get those strikeouts, like, I think that's where you want your batters at in that series. You know, maybe it's tricky because, like I said, you want to get away from that chalk, but Yamamoto's really lined up in this contest really well. So it's, of course, okay to have some of that chalk. But, yeah, I think that American League, however we want to call it, a portion of that bracket, I think that's honestly going to be a batting-oriented series.
Yeah, it's interesting theories.
Cleveland advances, and we have Cleveland-Seattle. You're going to have a whole lot of teams with Jose Ramirez and no other Cleveland players on their roster. So, then a Gavin Williams makes sense because they can get blown out in that series 3-1, but Gavin Williams can go out and have a great game, right? So there's that another angle to look at it as well.
So true.
Yeah, there's only so much chalk to go around, and right. It's just picking and choosing which stick of chalk you're gonna be able to throw on the ground, and which ones you're gonna be okay carrying around with you. with everything that you, Lucas, you said the last year was the first year that you did this contest. Last thing I'll ask you here is, like, what did you learn? What did you take away from it? And what did, you know, what are you hoping to kind of take into the 2025 season? And then how many entries will you do?
For me, I don't have as good of a memory as some other people. I want the one team where everything is, I know what's happening. I don't, yeah. I, you know, whenever I do my bracket, I have one bracket. I want to be able to say, I picked that game. Okay. Well, if you have five brackets, I mean, who cares? No offense. So I'm going to have the one solo bullet. And then honestly, as far as like what I had learned, like in this contest last year, I had Cleveland beating the Yankees. And I think that that was too far-fetched, maybe, so to speak. So I think that it's good to go against the grain, but I think that you don't need to go so far where, you know, you're picking Cam Schlittler if as your Yankee to be like different. Like, I think you can get different in a way where you don't have as much chalk, but like you don't need to go to these guys that are just 2% owned. I mean, I think that there's other ways around it, but yeah, it was a good learning experience, and I'm super fired up for this year.
Kevin, you've done this a couple times, and as we kind of mentioned, you were pretty successful a couple years ago. What have you kind of taken away from the multiple years of doing it? And then, of course, how many teams will you end up doing? And how many teams have you done in the past, and how many teams are you planning on doing this year?
It's always been between one and three, and we haven't decided, but probably a couple, if not three. And I think we're going to do it a little differently. I think we're going to go for it. I think that one thing I realized is if I my teams either after the first round or two or first round, let's say after the first round, my teams are usually fairly similar. So I think I'm going to do two identical teams for the first round. And try to nail it, get all four teams at advance. And then that way, then I have two entries starting out with only two rounds to go. I think that's where I'm at. I don't think I want to vary my first round. I think I want to try to nail it, but I think I want a couple of entries to then try to vary from going forward from there if I am lucky enough to nail that first round. The big thing for me that I realized over the years, I think, there's so many great hitters, right?
Yeah.
So many good about hitters that with the in outfield. Baseball. So yeah. I get there and I have my hitters, and now I got to fill these six pitching spots, and I have three hitters from all the teams I think are going to advance. So I'm taking six pitchers from teams I think are going to lose. And I think it just doesn't work out. Of course, there's going to be one or two pitchers a lot of people have. If Detroit advances, Scooble. If Boston advances, Crochet, right? But I think I need more pitching from the teams I think are going to advance in the first round. I did it that way last year, and I was wrong about the teams advancing. But I think it's the way to go, even though I haven't got to see it all the way through yet. I think prioritizing pitching is a good way that I haven't really tried yet, other than I had the wrong teams in the first round, so it didn't work out. But if I have the right teams and prioritize pitching, I think I'll be in a better spot than I have been other years in the past.
You got to, I mean, just doing very quick back of napkin math, the multipliers on the right pitchers are that much more powerful than
the especially when you get to the seven game series.
Exactly.
When you can see them twice in both series.
I mean, if you get good K percentage guy or K per nine guy, that's, you know, going six or seven innings and getting six or seven strikeouts at minimum, then, you know, that gets multiplied two times, three times in that seven game series, as you just pointed out.
And to Lucas's point earlier in the show, that was a great point. The rostership is going to be higher on the game one starter. So if it's a game two guy that you're really interested in a seven game series, he's still going to get a second shot. Hopefully that's where I'm looking.
Yeah, those wild card winners are going to play a big role in this decision making, because we already know who the game one starters are for those four other teams. But the other four teams that are making it, you don't know how that's going to line up. You can extrapolate, you can figure, you can kind of guess, but it's not going to be their game one starter from the wild card round, more likely.
Right.
And then just about all of those teams are playing, are putting their aces in that spot because it's a three game series. They like, they have to play those, they have to play those guys. So, yeah, interesting to see how that kind of irons itself out, and have fun with it. I mean, ultimately, that's why we're here, right? We're here to have
Last season, all the road teams go out and win day one, so we really feel like we're gonna have a lot of three game series to start the week.
That would be nice. That'd be nice. All right, well, I think that's gonna do it. I'm gonna let Lucas close us out here with any other tidbits of you know, thoughts on this format, on anything else that we've talked about. And then if you have anything in the works, Lucas, of course, this is your time to, you know, shout it out, let everybody know what you're working on, if anything that they need to keep an eye out for throughout the course of the offseason.
Yeah, I think that we covered a lot of really good points. I know I've said it all along the whole podcast, but I think just getting a little bit different, getting a little bit not with the normal process. Before last year, I had the stat pulled up earlier and I can't find it, but there was at least four, maybe 5 years in a row where the number one seed was beaten in the first round they played in that divisional series. I think it was 4 years, but anyways, last year was the anomaly where you had the number one seeds go far. That's typically not always the way it works. So I think just looking at it and going a little bit against the grain, I'm not saying you have to choose, you know, a six seed to go all the way on both sides or nothing, but just having maybe put a favorite to lose and like have that conviction and choose that. I think that could be a powerful way to play this contest. Now, which of those teams is it going to be? I'm really not sure. That's the whole point. But yeah, like I said, going back to the 2020 playoffs, 4 years in a row, the number one seed had lost at least on one side of the bracket in every one of those years. Last year was the anomaly. So yeah.
Awesome. Kevin, any other last thoughts? You've been doing this for a couple of years now, kind of gone over some of the things that you're going to do differently, or at least you're changing about it. But what I guess closes out with, what keeps you coming back to this contest a year in and year out?
Like I said, this, I absolutely love this contest because, as I said earlier, there's so many different angles that we could expand on for several minutes. This literally could be a 4 or 5 hour pod if we really wanted to dive into each little thing that we're going to look at. So yeah, I cannot recommend this contest enough. I think it's a lot of fun. It keeps you involved throughout the postseason before we start doing our draft and hold drafts here before too long. Mm-hmm. And and shout out to Brian and James, I believe, the two On the Wire Listener League winners this season. So congratulations to those guys. And I don't think either league was particularly close. I think we've known those two were going to take those down for at least a couple of weeks, realistically. Well done, Brian and James.
Well done. Thank you very much for that participation and just for kicking all our butts. And so, yeah, I think that is going to do it. And I should clarify as well, we had other ad breaks. This whole episode was not an ad break. We are not getting anything from NFBC.
No, it's just so much fun. A
very interesting format that, most of us that are listening, and then definitely you guys have been participating in and plan on participating in. And so, you know, just because fantasy season is over doesn't mean we need to stop talking about fantasy.
400 entries is a pretty low number for a $20,000 grand prize to the overall winner. That's a pretty nice contest.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, there's that overall aspect of it. First place, 20,000, first, second, and third gets 5,000, 4,000 respectively. So plenty of prize money to go around there as well. So take a look at it. Enter it, let us know how any on it kind of strategies that you're planning on doing as well. And then maybe next week we'll touch on anything else that we didn't touch on. Like Kevin said, we could go 4 or 5 hours on this. but that is going to do it for episode 232 of On the Wire. We'll be with you basically every week throughout the offseason talking about various things. So stick with us, whether you're watching us on the YouTube or listening to us the old-fashioned way, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be happy and ecstatic that you're here with us, and we'll be here with you all off-season long. After all that, we want to thank Lucas Beery for joining us once again. It will not be your last time. I don't care how many times you root against the Sox. Lucas, will very happy to have you back on anytime. But that's going to do it. I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening. We bid you goodbye.